Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I'm a Trumpocrat.
Trumpocrat, that's right.
If I have the ability to vote, I'm going to vote for him.
You cannot make a brilliant speech where they say that was such an incredible, elegant speech if I'm talking about dishwashers, sinks, toilets, light bulbs.
Now, Mark Reardon.
You're a lying, dog-faced pony soldier.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Well, first and foremost, my thanks to Dave Klein, my producer. That's one of my favorite opens that we put together recently featuring Blago. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We have a ton to get to. The governor's going to join me in about 10 minutes. We're going to talk about why a tiger got the coronavirus and whether your pets can get it, because I think a lot of people want to know that. I think it's a little weird. I have to quarantine a cat right now, non-coronavirus related, so that's a lot of fun. What else we got going? Oh, John Prine died, and I'm really sad about that. I had a chance to see him a couple of times recently in Columbia, Missouri. And my friend Richard King, who is the, used to own the Blue Note in Columbia, sold that a few years ago and ran the Roots and Blues Music Festival. He'll chime in on John Prine a little bit later. On the musical front, we're going to do something pretty cool with my friend Tim Summer, who's a music critic, in the 3 o'clock hour. So for those of you looking for something lighter, and if you're music fans, that's coming up at 3:30. Along the lines of most overrated band, most underappreciated band. He put a list together, and I put my own list together this morning. So I want to talk about the president's news conference yesterday. As I was leaving the air, he was doing the briefing with Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birch and everyone else. And there's this continued effort to pin everything that's happened on Donald Trump. Most of you know that I've never been the biggest fan of the president, although I sort of changed my tune and became more defensive of him after Brett Kavanaugh, the Covington Catholic. But I think that a lot of the treatment in the media right now is completely unfair. And here's an example of what happened last night. Chris Cuomo's on from his basement, recovering from the coronavirus, and Trump says something. I heard this whole exchange, but this is the soundbite they played on CNN.
You said within a couple of days, the cases will be down to zero.
Well, the cases really didn't build up for a while, but you have to understand, I'm a cheerleader for this country. I don't want to create havoc and shock and everything else. I'm not going to go out and start screaming, this could happen, this could happen.
All right. I think that's a valid point. So let's they cut that down a little bit. Let's play a little bit more of the broader context, if you will.
Well, the cases really didn't build up for a while, but you have to understand, I'm a cheerleader for this country. I don't want to create havoc and shock and everything else, but ultimately, when I was saying that, I'm also closing it down. I obviously was concerned about it because I closed down our country to China, which was heavily infected. I then closed it down to Europe. That's a big move, closing it down from China and then closing it down from Europe and then ultimately closing it down to the UK.
So he goes through this, and what he's trying to do, I think, he's trying to create a little bit of a defense of himself. Look, there's a lot of blame to go around, and the president said some things at the end of February, the beginning of March, that I think a lot of people were saying. Don't believe me? Here's the evidence. And this is where this stuff in the media gets completely unfair. I have not seen one person on CNN or anywhere else talk about Bill de Blasio and some of the comments that he made. So Cheryl Atkinson, who is a fine journalist, a real journalist, actually does investigative reporting, used to be at CNN and other networks. She's out on her own right now. I think Channel 30 plays her show on Sunday mornings. So she goes through, she went through and she gathered a list of all of the things that people said over the last month and a half on the coronavirus. And so, for example, when Sean Hannity said, the sky is falling, we're all doomed, the end is near, or at least that's what the media mob would like you to think. Criticized for that. Others who said similar, Robert Dingwell, Wired, we should de-escalate the war on the coronavirus. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who I think is doing a great job right now trying to defend his city. It's about the vulnerable. It's not about 95% of us. It's about a few percent who are vulnerable. Bring down that anxiety, bring down that fear, bring down that paranoia. Dr. David Katz, New York Times. Is our fight against the coronavirus worse than the disease? The CDC, through April 4th, the immediate risk of being exposed to this virus is still low for most Americans. So then you had a situation where other people said, look, the more I learn about the coronavirus, the less concerned I am. Well, you had the BBC's Robert Coffey saying the UK's chief government medical advisor, Chris Whitty, says even though the rates are higher for older people, the great majority of older people will have mild or moderate disease. Not true. Anthony Fauci said this is not a major threat to the people in the United States, and it's not something that citizens of the United States should be worried about. Now, that was late February. That might go to January. But the list goes on and on and on here with people that said, all right, so the common deal is, I said this, look, the flu, the regular flu, kills tens of thousands of people. So why are we so worried about this? Well, we've been educated. We know how infectious it is. We know the difference between the regular flu. So yes, these steps were necessary. But you had people, de Blasio was telling people at the beginning of March, go and eat in the restaurants. That's what was happening with a lot of different people. Let's see if I can find that right now, because Cheryl does a great job. Oh, Devin Nunes, ripped by the liberal mob. If you're healthy, you and your family, it's a great time to just go out and go to a local restaurant, right? Senator James Imhoff said, want to shake hands? So here you have Rosie Spinks in the New York Times. Who says it's not safe to travel to China? She's defending travel to China. Bill de Blasio, I'm encouraging New Yorkers to go out with your lives, go on with your lives, get out on the town despite the coronavirus. That was the beginning of March. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi wanted people to go to San Francisco and Chinatown. That's what we're trying to do today, is to say everything is fine here. Come because the precautions have been taken. The city is on top of the situation. Well, they weren't on top of the situation. Nobody was on top of it because nobody saw the severity of this, in large part because China lied and continues to lie. So you can put a portion of this on the president, sure. And there's a part of me that wonders if at a certain point he shouldn't at least accept some of that, but also say, look, we were caught off guard. But if you say you're wrong, then you're going to get hammered even more. Governor Parson is coming up next on KMOX.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
When you're out of my sight, you must constantly Twitter me exactly what you're up to.
Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX.
And you can follow on Instagram at Mark Talk. We have the show page on Facebook as well. You know, it's funny. I did the whole opening segment, didn't even mention Bernie Sanders ditching out of the race, because really, I think at this point, nobody cares. Really, nobody cares. We're joined this afternoon by the governor of the state of Missouri, Mike Parson, with me. Hadn't chatted with him in a while. Obviously been very busy, so I appreciate you squeezing me in. How are you, Governor?
I'm doing good. We're doing good here. Just hanging in here every day trying to fight this virus.
So I'm not one to look back. Really, I prefer to look forward on solutions. But I have to ask you, because I still think some people feel that you waited too long on the stay-at-home order. I think that I felt that a lot of people in certain areas, including ours here in St. Louis, were already following moves like that. But there is this sense that maybe we were, you know, behind the eight ball on this just a little bit. So what's your explanation for that?
Yeah, I don't think that's the case at all. We come out with an order on March the 23rd that basically was social distancing with no exceptions. And I think that's always important to understand that. In the original order, we didn't have any. And that's what really started this, I think, as the group smaller than 10. And there was no exceptions. What happened when everybody started doing stay-at-home orders or shelter orders, they started doing all the exemptions out there. And that becomes the most difficult thing when you try to do that order statewide, because it's totally different in St. Louis versus a town that's only got two businesses in it, a minimum across the state. So that was a struggle. And then I'll be honest with you, trying to figure out who's winners and who's losers, who gets to stay in business, who don't, and who loses their jobs and who don't. That's a tough decision to make for any elected official. But I do think, Mark, people responded to the orders that we did and will continue to do that. And again, the second order I did was basically just really protecting people in big crowds going into these box stores and, frankly, protecting employees that have to work there every day.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we should not take for granted, because these workers, we talk a lot about the healthcare workers, but these folks who work at grocery stores, and they're on the front lines as well. So I think that that's important. So we know that this is not New York. Missouri is very different. I've even mentioned it from the standpoint that I feel like we're safer here by the very nature of where we're located geographically. But you don't want it to become New York, so that's why you have the situation with the rules and the social distancing. What is your biggest concern moving forward as we try to get through what the president's describing as maybe our toughest week yet?
Yeah, you know, I think you just got to stay true to the orders. I mean, Missourians just got to buckle down right now. You got to take it upon your own shoulders and really stay home. Stay out of the way. Don't be out if you don't have to be out to help on it. That is the most important thing everybody can do right now is just settle down for here for about a week, 10 days, stay at home at all possible, and just quit making contact, quit going out if you don't have to go out and be around other people, because that's the risk. That's what's driving it. There's enough problems without adding to that situation when we don't have to.
County Executive Sam Page, St. Louis County Executive, has asked for help from the National Guard, sent you a letter yesterday. What is your stance on that currently?
Yeah, we activated the Guard here a week or so ago to be able to help in different things that we can do, and we can help in situations like that, whether it be transportation. And frankly, the Guard's out there now doing some things. You know, you just got to make sure what role the Guard plays versus the local levels. But there's some ways we can help. But I don't know that we'll do everything that he's asking for. But there's ways that we can help with the Guard, and we'll continue to make that available where we need to.
What kind of communication do you have currently at the state level with the White House or with the task force and the communication? I know that there are calls with governors that the vice president's been on, but what's the level of communication right now?
Yeah, they've been really good about that, to be right honest about it. We've normally twice a week, we're talking to the president and the vice president directly, and they open those calls up for questions for all the governors across the United States. And, I mean, there's some tough conversations that goes on in those phone calls, but, you know, that communication's there. I think the one thing that we're all starting to realize, and I talked to a group of governors just the other night, you know, all the modeling that's coming out there, you know, which is a little disappointing, but, you know, a lot of the models that come out there are not accurate models that's been put out there from think tanks, from different groups, from different areas, and they're just not very accurate. So I think for most of us governors, we're developing our own models for our own states to really know what are the true facts. How many ICU beds are there? How many ventilators are there? You know, not kind of the way the think tanks are doing it, but the real facts.
Yeah,
of what it is.
The real numbers, right. That. Yeah, and look, we have another update coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon from our pandemic task force and Dr. Garza. I think you're right. I think that's important. One of the areas of concern in our state is obviously we don't want to overwhelm St. Louis, Kansas City, Springfield, but the rural hospitals are a big concern for medical experts. So what can you share at this point with what might be happening in some of the rural communities outstate Missouri to prevent an overflow?
Yeah, I think one of the things, we know kind of where the hot spots are in the state. We look at data every day. For example, St. Louis is definitely one that we've got a facility in place or getting ready to put one in place that can take the overflow from St. Louis. The rural area, the problems you have with the rural area is just getting the basic equipment to them, too. They're not prepared when it comes to PPE a lot of places. They don't have ventilators. They don't have ICU units. So that's why we're stressing every day for those people to understand you don't get a free ride because you live in rural Missouri. This can happen to you too, and somewhere you're going to have to go to those facilities. So, one, we try to make sure they got those basic supplies where they can do a little more testing and where they know what to do if they have it in quarantine-wise. But that's something we look at every day, where they're at in the state, how many are popping up across the state, and really what is the reaction to that. I think it's also important, Mark, we got to realize too, the vast majority of the people that get this get to go home. Not everybody's in an ICU bed. We got to prepare for that every day. But I think the public also needs to understand, you know, do the things you're supposed to do. You can go home and you can recover and you're going to be fine.
Governor, there's a plan. And I don't know the details of this, but Governor Tim Walz in Minnesota is unveiling a plan called the Minnesota Way of responding to the pandemic. And this is a strategy that's being described as, you know, opening up the economy just a little bit, allowing more work. What plans do we have? And I agree with you, what you just said about the virus, people need to know that. But because asymptomatic people can still spread it, that's why there's a concern. But let's be honest here. People are really, really worried about jobs, having a job, keeping a job. So when it comes to getting the economy moving, getting people back out in the workforce, do we have a plan right now?
Yeah, I think we do. And I think what that plan will be, it will be a coordinated effort between the state and the cities across the state when we sit down. I talk to the mayors weekly, but at some point we're going to have to make sure when we open things up, one, it's safe to do that, and that you don't have a relapse here is the last thing we need. But it's going to take a bit to get there. And I think, again, that's got to be driven by data, not what just people think. You got to be able to take a look and see where we at, where's this virus going, and how do we really open up the economy? Because you're 100% right. You know, look, over 100,000 people have filed for unemployment over here, and I guarantee every one of them thought their jobs were essential to them, right. Their family
yeah.
members. You know, and it's tough right now, but we're looking at that economy every day also. You know, COVID-19, I know it's on the front page, but we have to be looking at that economy. How are we going to restart it? How are we going to get them jobs back and get them open? And I think we will. I think we will.
So we have a balanced budget that is required constitutionally in Missouri, the legislature trying to get some work done. This obviously is going to put immense amount of pressure on the state coffers and in government, you know, across the spectrum. So I think you have to be in a situation right now where you got to focus on what's ahead of us. But obviously, you have to be thinking ahead for the budgetary concerns for Missouri in the future. What, can you do anything about that?
Yeah, well, there are two priorities. One, with federal stimulus money that's coming in, quote, we got to be one. We got to be able to handle that as it comes in, because that's never happened like this before. And two, you got to be working on the 2021 budget. And you have to understand there's going to be a definite shortfall in there. So every day we're working on those things. We're looking at these things. But just what you said, this is going to have a trickle-down effect. The state's not going to have the money to be able to just supplement everybody else in the state, because we're going to be in the same boat as small towns, as big towns. And it's going to be a crunch time for a while once we get through this. And that's just the way it's going to be. And there's no way to sugarcoat that. It's just going to be some tough times.
One of the things I like to do here recently is try to focus on some positivity in your work on this crisis here in the past month. I mean, you've got to see some silver linings here, some people that have inspired you, some really, really great things that are happening out there, because this type of thing does end up bringing people together.
Let me just tell you, the people of Missouri has had a real gut check here, to be right honest about it. I mean, they've reached down and doing some amazing things out there. Doctors, the medical corps, the grocery stores, the innovation that's coming out of all this is just incredible. But I will tell you, the suppliers, the manufacturers have stepped forward to make products and everything. People doing what they're being asked to do. That's sometimes we don't even give credit where they do, because they are going home and buckling down and doing what they're supposed to do. But I'm telling you, there's amazing things you see every day with kind-hearted people doing things to help one another. And just so many people doing so such innovative things to get through this crisis. But I do believe, when I look at the numbers, and we've been here for over 30 days now straight, and we look at these numbers every day, I think there is a little hope on the horizon. I really do. I think things are looking a little better. There's still some areas we're concerned, but there is some leveling off. If there is such a thing as trying to get a little normal to chaos, we're kind of in that area right now. Some of the hospitals have done great jobs, and I think you're seeing a little normality. I think some of the numbers are starting to flatten, but we still got a ways to go. So, you know, it's just the truth. A lot of good
things. And I agree with you. And I think the important thing is, because there's always a temptation then for people to sit back and say, wait a second, why are we doing all this if the numbers are working? Well, the reason the numbers are heading in a positive direction is because we're doing all this. And that's still, I think, going to be a challenge to convince some people. Governor Mike Parson, I appreciate it. I know how busy you are. Thank you so much this afternoon for joining me, and keep us posted on everything.
All right. Appreciate you. Keep up the good work.
That is Governor Mike Parson with us this afternoon, and hopefully some encouraging news there. But I don't know if you know, he talked about the models. The problem is he's right. We're hearing more models today. I would encourage people to be careful with the models. The models today show that the death rate is going to be lower. Tomorrow they may say something different. Yeah, you know, the first person I thought of when I heard about the death of John Prine, my friend Richard King in Columbia, who used to own the Blue Note and the Roots and Blues Music Festival. So we're going to have him join us here in about 15 minutes for a look back at John Prine, just legendary singer-songwriter, one of the best songwriters in history. So I saw a story on CNET, because you had the situation where a tiger tested positive for the coronavirus. I have 3 dogs and 2 cats, and I think pet owners are curious about whether or not this is something they have to worry about. It's been out there sort of bubbling underneath the surface, and I'm not sure if everyone has the answers. So Ian Scheer from CNET, executive editor, with me this afternoon. Hi, Ian. How are you?
Hi, I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing good. I can't remember. Do you have dogs, cats, things along those lines?
I have a very rambunctious cat. So we've definitely thought about this, particularly because, as you mentioned, a tiger was said to have contracted coronavirus. So it was definitely worrisome, considering, you know, my house cat is related in some way to the to those tigers.
Well, and I've seen a couple of stories about pets testing positive. So what do we know about this at this point? Because we know that the coronavirus have lived through animals. We know that in this particular case, I even think I read something that an anteater was involved before the bat. I don't know if you've heard that, but I saw one reference to that a couple of weeks ago where they thought maybe it originated with an anteater and then a bat. But what do we know at this point about pets?
Yeah, so we need to make a distinction between wild animals and house pets. So the you know, they're still trying to trace where all of this kind of blew up from. Originally, there was talk about bats. And then, as you mentioned, the anteater, which is a mammal anteater that's very popular in Asia. We don't know the specifics. And so it's hard to kind of put our finger on that. But when it comes to our house pets, there are a couple of instances where we have seen them test positive, typically with people who are patients who are infected, who have their own animals. So it's a human to animal transfer. That said, there is not really much data out there that you need to be particularly worried. While there is a kind of indications that it could happen, doesn't mean it will. It's kind of like the concerns people have about getting delivery of food. You know, there's some data out there that shows how long coronavirus lives on cardboard or inside food or whatever. Even though it lives there, it doesn't mean it's actually going to transmit. And that's the thing that we all have to worry about, is when it transmits. So for now, not to worry. You don't have to worry about, you know, mittens and ruffles and all your other animals. For now, it's considered that they're pretty okay. It's really about the, you know, there's a possibility. So, you know, if your animal's acting odd, never hurts to call the vet, but I wouldn't worry particularly about it. And we had a scare in our house with one of us possibly having coronavirus. And the last thing we really worried about was the cat. You know, she was doing fine.
So I'm guessing everyone in your house is doing okay. Now you caught my attention.
Yeah, believe it or not, we still haven't got our test results back. It was me. I went to get groceries, and then a couple of days later, I was feeling really under the weather. So I got my test last Monday. Still no results, but I've pretty much come back to normal. And the CDC guidelines are that I quarantine myself for 7 days alone from my family. And then I get to get out if I've had fever free and all these other things. And after 7 days, so I'm to the world of the living, as it were. But, you know, in the meantime, the big thing that we've had to think about is, you know, there aren't even enough, the tests are so far behind that we're not able to actually get information about whether I had it. So, you know, we're just kind of sitting here waiting.
Well, good luck with that. I want to get you on here. We may have to wait till next week and talk about some tech issues. I am simply trying to buy an iPad right now, and it's completely impossible to buy things.
Good luck. Stores.
I know. Well, it's just crazy. I think I found something on the Apple store for quicker delivery. But it's interesting because these companies, in order to stay in business, they have to sell things, but they're overwhelmed and they're not making things easy to buy right now. So that's a bit of a problem. Ian Scheer, dude, I hope you're okay. I wish you luck with that. Stay safe. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Absolutely. Right. Take care. Stay healthy.
Take care. 2:40 at the Voice of St. Louis. We'll take a look at John Prine's life, legendary singer-songwriter, next on KMOX.
She don't like her eggs all runny. She thinks,
you know, when a guy like John Prine dies, his reach is far and wide. And listen to this. This is Bill Murray talking about John Prine.
So once upon a time, it was the first time in my ever life I was ever not people go clinically depressed, but like a real bummer to be around, like a real downer to be around. And I just couldn't get myself having any kind of fun. And I thought to myself, I remember something that my friend Hunter Thompson had said during a kind of an addled state. He said, well, I don't know if I can do his voice after having a turkey, cheese, and Duke's mayonnaise sandwich, but we're going to have to rely on John Prine for the sense of humor. Which I thought was like one of those addled things that you say. But we did end up listening. But as it turned out, that it came to me as I was feeling so miserable. And somewhere there's a record that John made that is that you made this like It's got a whole lot of tracks on it. It's got like 26 or 7 tracks on it, maybe 30.
Great Days.
What's it called?
Great Days.
It's Great Days. And there's a lot of tracks on it, more than I ever saw. I remember listening, and I think this song was about track 22 or 26 or something. It's deep. It's deep in the, it's like way, way in it. I'm thinking to myself, who the hell put him in charge of the sense of humor as I'm going way into this record? But there it was, this song, Linda Goes to Mars. And I heard that song and I went, And that was the beginning of the return.
That's great.
That was the very bottom. And Linda Goes to Mars, I have a very
song. When you wish you bring me something home.
Our sacred wedding. And then, come to find out, I'd listened to this record, but maybe I hadn't paid close enough attention. His new record, the most recent record, which was released a couple years ago, The Tree of Forgiveness, the last song was this, When I Get to Heaven.
When I get to heaven, I'm going to shake God's hand, thank him for more blessings than one man can stand. Then I'm going to get a guitar and start a rock and roll band. Check into a swell hotel. Ain't the afterlife grand? And then I'm going to get a cocktail, vodka and ginger ale. Yeah, I'm going to smoke a cigarette.
Well, how about that? That is the last song on John Prine's latest album. And the first person I thought of when I heard the news last night, the sad news about John Prine, is my friend Richard King in Columbia, Missouri, the former purveyor of the Blue Note and also the Roots and Blues Music Festival. Richard, how are you? I know how sad you had to be when you heard this news.
Yeah, it really hurt. It hit home. You know, he and myself, we got along pretty well, and I always said that he legitimized Roots and Blues Festival for me by just saying he will appear. After that, everything just fell into place. So, you know, he was a wonderful man, but when I found out about what was going on and knowing that he had problems with his lungs previous, I was like, whoa, I don't know how, I didn't think it was going to go well. It was, you know, it's just a tough one to take.
How many times over the years with the Blue Note and Roots and Blues, I had been very lucky and I managed to see him twice, I guess, in the last 5 or 6 years. I had never seen John Prine before that. He would come through St. Louis on a regular basis as well, despite playing, you know, the festival in Columbia. But how many times did you have him in over the years? Do you even keep track of that?
I think it was about, a total of 4 times. And you know, for the Roots and Blues Festival, I had been after him for like 3 or 4 years. And I got to know his management really well and his agent and all that. And then 1 year they said, you know what, we're gonna be able to come. We promise you we're going to come. So they decided to come. And that was right around when he had the surgery for cancer. And then they called me back and they said, we're going to put this on hold till we see how this goes. He had the surgery and they came back and they said, he's never sounded better. We're good to go. So, you know, it's been a history with him, a lot of behind the scenes stuff. But, you know, he was a heck of a guy. And I also had him at the Missouri Theater, I believe, back in the late 90s as well, too. So the festival and the Missouri Theater when I was a promoter running the Blue Note.
Did you have a chance over the last few years when he would come into Roots and Blues to deal with John personally or get to know him at all? I mean, he had this sense of humor that was unique, and he showed that on stage, you know, from time to time. But did you have any contact directly like that?
Oh, yeah. The last time he was here, they were very guarded with him. So, you know, I went into his dressing room and, you know, I don't like to be that pesky promoter guy. I just wanted to go in. Typically, I would go in and say thank you to him and just chat for a little bit, ask him how he was doing, things like that. The first year that I had him, though, in Columbia was at the Missouri Theater. I had to pick him up for sound check, and I took him down for the sound check, and then I had to take him back to his hotel. And he said, hey, would you do me a favor? And I'm like, it's John Prine. Of course I'll do you a favor.
Yeah, right.
And he said, do you mind driving up on campus? I used to have buddies that went to school here, and I came up here a few times back in the 70s. And so we kind of scooted around Columbia and looking for some old spots that he could recall. And, you know, just the easygoing guy. his songs are pretty much what he's all about. And to me, I think he's one of the greatest songwriters that ever existed.
Well, I think you'd have a lot of agreement on that. And, you know, the backstory here, and I was unfamiliar with some of it, recounted in the obits, is in 1970, Kris Kristofferson hears him at this club called Earl of Old Town in Chicago. I don't even know that club. And then a few weeks later, he invites him on stage in Greenwich Village. He's there with Carly Simon. And here's what I think this is all, what Kristofferson says when he, you know, introduces him. He says, "No way somebody this young can be writing so heavy. John Prine is so good, we may have to break his thumbs."
Yeah, I was reading that. That's pretty funny. You know, it is interesting because right around that, well, Prine was playing at the Fifth Peg, and Kristofferson was in Chicago originally playing at the Quiet Night, which that really perked my interest. I was reading the same old bit that you did. The first time and only time I was in the Quiet Night in Chicago, which was a classic music club, was on the second floor right next to an L station in up in northern, a little north of the city. I got to see Tom Waits in one of those places.
Oh, wow.
People in the room. Yeah. I don't know whatever. I know that the Quiet Night is no longer in existence. But yeah, that's kind of where John stepped in, I think, with Kris. To a one night there too. It's great to see those kind of things, read those stories and the history of these people. And, you know, it's funny. I was thinking back to where John Prine came into my life. And I remember hanging out with my buddies in college and, you know, drinking beer and doing all the stupid things that you do in college. But John Prine stuck out in my brain for the longest time, listening to those. I mean, even today, that song "Hello in There" is just grabs me every time I hear it. So, you know, he's got an incredible history of songwriting, and it's really, really sad to see him. He's gone.
Well, you know, and that moment in New York, really life changing, because Jerry Wexler was in the audience with Atlantic Records, signed him the next day. And, you know, then you could say the rest is history. So you have to think, you have all these interesting musical moments and just moments in life overall. You have to think, man, if that moment didn't happen, would we have all that great songwriting? So you're seeing tributes. You know, before you came on here, I played, of all people, Bill Murray, who is a huge fan. But the tributes online have been far and wide for John Prine and the influences that he, I mean, look, you got guys like Bob Dylan who list him as one of his favorite songwriters.
You know, it's funny, Mark, all those years that I was trying to get him to play at the Roots and Blues Festival, and I'm not kidding you, it was about 3 years of hard work on the phone. And you know, just in the last 4 or 5 years, he really, you know, got his due. You know, it was like, wow, it took that long. And I don't think it changed the guy one bit, but for me, it was really gratifying to see that, you know, the Grammys recognized him and other artists. Of course, most of the artists that I really like, the Jason Isbells and the Amanda Shires of the world, they were on him from the very get-go, you know. But it is, it's amazing how just his last few years, and, you know, he beat cancer twice and he loses to the coronavirus.
Just I know.
Breaks your heart, man. Breaks your heart. But yeah, well, his influence is great.
It's just one of those. I mean, I have this terrible feeling we're going to see more along these lines before this is all over. But Richard, thanks for coming on here and sharing the memories. How are things holding up in Columbia right now?
You know, everybody's trying to behave. You know, we've been, you know, I'm surprised my dogs didn't start barking when the phone rang. You know, laying low, it's just, that's what you have to do. So I just took a nice long walk this afternoon. But everything in Columbia is fine, trying to support all the businesses, trying to support all the restaurants. I think that folks are kind of figuring this out. And what I really think is great is, a lot of the restaurants that, you know, we normally would go to are doing great takeout business and things like that. So I know the campus is completely, you know, abandoned. There's nothing going on up there. It's an eerie, kind of weird time to be in Columbia, especially when the spring hits.
I think it's a weird time to be anywhere. But yeah, I mean, it's because usually you still have a pretty good presence of students even after graduation. But I'm guessing that's going to be even weird this year. My son, who would ordinarily be there, I have one who still lives there. Evan, the older son, Richard, is still there, and he's working. But Aiden, my 20-year-old, he's at home right now. So yeah, it's just bizarre. Look, let's go out with some John Prime. This song that we opened with here this afternoon, again, kind of bizarre because this was the last cut of the most recent record called The Tree of Forgiveness. Richard King and Columbia will go out with When I Get to Heaven. Thank you so much for sharing the memories. John Prime, dead at the age of 73. And we're back with the second hour of the show, an update from the St. Louis Region Pandemic Task Force at 3 o'clock on KMOX.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.